This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. In the occupied West Bank, the Israeli occupation war machine continues its killing, arrest, and demolition campaign against Palestinians. The Jenin refugee camp has now been the epicenter of Israel's aggression for 30 consecutive days. According to the government figures, at least 26 people have been killed, hundreds have been arrested, and over 17,000 people been forcibly displaced from the camp. Yet displacement is not just limited to Jenin. At least 16,000 people have also been displaced in Nur al-Shams, Tukaram, and their surrounding areas. The mass displacement of Palestinians from various parts of the West Bank in recent weeks marks the largest displacement operations in decades. Now, the ramping up of the Zionist ethnic cleansing campaign in the West Bank is a focus of today's Spotlight program. And now we're going to welcome Naka Hamed, our Ramallah correspondent, to the program to get the latest on the ground. Hello, Naka. Good to check in with you. Before we introduce our guests, if you could give us the latest on the ground in the occupied territory there.
Yes, hello to you too, Daniel. And, of course, to the past, we are just going to talk about the past month, not to mention the last 15 months of relentless aggression over here in the West Bank. Over the past month, the West Bank has experienced significant escalation in military violence by the IOF. Of course, this has led to widespread displacement and humanitarian crisis in the northern part of the West Bank. On January 21st, the IOF initiated a large military-scale offensive called the Iron Walls, targeting Palestinian refugee camp. Of course, as it is announced, it is targeting terrorism, in, as they have described it, of course, in the northern part of the West Bank. It has started in Jenin, only to spread towards Tul Kerem, Al-Far'a, and, of course, Tul Kerem and both of its refugee camps, Nur Shams and Tul Kerem refugee camp, Al-Far'a refugee camp, Salmoun, and the neighboring area. This has resulted of the intensity, actually, of these operations has resulted in the largest displacement for the Palestinians since the 1967 over here in the West Bank. We are talking about almost 50,000 Palestinians have fled from their homes. Today, the numbers were shocking, actually, more than 500 houses and buildings inside Jenin, more than 700 from Tul Kerem. Of course, this is not a new thing that is going on over here in the West Bank, but the intensity is actually surprising. The Israeli military continues their aggression, demolishing to the infrastructure, as we have seen. This is an attempt to make these refugee camps uninhabitable, of course, and of course to change the geographical situation inside these refugee camps and targeting the Palestinian resistance groups inside the Palestinian resistance groups into the north of the north of the West Bank. This is not the only escalation that is going on in the West Bank, as it is the most intense, but the settler violence is being unprecedented attacks, daily attacks, vicious attacks towards Palestinians and Palestinian communities, Palestinian villages, burning down fields and homes and farms, just cutting off the roads by Israeli settlers to Palestinians, assaulting them, beating them. And the main topic, of course, is land stealing and land theft. The amount of the confiscation of the land since the beginning of this year is actually horrific. We are talking about not just losing the land, but losing resources like water and like, of course, under the term of pastoral settlement that is being expanding more and more in the West Bank. Nearly 300% the settlement expansion has increased by 300%. Of course, when we are talking about settlement expansion, we are talking about people losing their livelihoods, people losing their lands, people even being cut off their villages. And now, as we are seeing in the West Bank, unprecedented cutting off between the cities. The main roads are closed, the checkpoints are closed, and this is what the situation looks like over here in the West Bank.
Okay, Naka, stay safe. Thank you for that update. That's Naka Hamed, a Ramallah correspondent, joining us there from the occupied West Bank. And now for your guests. Joining us, Mr. Mazen Koumsi, a Palestinian scientist and author from Bethlehem. And also Charlotte Gates, international coordinator at the Samidun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, joining us from Beirut. Hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Mr. Koumsi, we're going to start with you there in occupied Bethlehem. 30 days now, sir, around the clock, attacks, detentions, destruction of homes, businesses, roads, and relevant infrastructure. I mean, something that the Palestinians there in the occupied territory, especially around the refugee camps, have not seen in decades. Your initial thoughts, please.
Yes, this is the largest onslaught on the Palestinians of the West Bank since the 20 years ago, or 24 years ago to be precise, with the uprising that started in 2000 and ended in 2005. There was a peak of onslaught in 2003, and this is similar, although it might be a little more actually, now with the ethnic cleansing of refugee camps like the one in Jenin and Tul Kerem, Nur Shams. So it is very horrific.
Thank you. And Charlotte Case, welcome to the program. Thanks for your patience. Your initial thoughts, please, on over a month now of escalated, not daily raids, because that, you very well know, has been the norm in the occupied territories for quite some time, but this level of extreme escalation of violence and displacement. Your initial thoughts, please.
Well, yes, this is a massive escalation. It's something that has been consistently encouraged by every U.S. president that was, you know, basically smiled upon by the Biden administration is now getting encouraged by the Trump administration in the United States. It's very clear that the settler movement in the Zionist regime, which is really part and parcel of and the motivating factor of the Zionist project as a whole, what is seeking the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in the West Bank, is attempting to force Palestinians to leave their land by making their lives miserable. I mean, tens of thousands of Palestinians have already been displaced from the refugee camps in the West Bank. This is an absolutely unacceptable situation, and it's happening also at the same time that the Zionist regime is intensifying its assault on UNRWA, which is the UN agency that provides services, education, and other forms of support to Palestinian refugees. Again, who, just like in Gaza, are being denied their fundamental right, which is their right to return home to their villages, homes, and properties inside occupied Palestine 48 that have been stolen for over 76 years.
Thank you. And Mr. Akumsieh, according to Mohammed Al-Sabag, head of the Jenin Camp Services Committee, said, "We don't know what's going on in the camp, but there is continuous demolition and roads being dug up." And according to the Jenin mayor, Mohammed Jarar, he said that the Israeli army adopted a pattern of random destruction at the camp and its surroundings in order to make the camp uninhabitable. So really, one has to ask why, sir, after doing this to Palestinians in Gaza, are you doing this to the Palestinians in the occupied West Bank? What is this part of?
Well, it's part of a pattern that has been in the plans for 80 years, which is to have Palestine as a land without the Palestinians. This is a classic Zionist colonial structure, and they take opportunities to implement it in stages. So in the past 24 hours, 13 homes in Jenin refugee camps were destroyed to prevent the possibility of return of the refugees to those camps. The idea is to liquidate the Palestinian cause, and the refugee camps have always been, of course, at the forefront of resistance, but also as a reminder of the ethnic cleansing of 1948 and what had happened. So the Zionist regime wants to end this, what they consider unacceptable presence of refugee camps in what they consider the land of Israel. So they want to remove. So that's why refugee camps from Shafat and Jerusalem to the south in Gaza, Jabalia and others, to the north in Jenin and other places, to the refugee camps in Lebanon, of course, and Syria, which are intended to be liquidated.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And Charlotte, is this the new norm now for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, these massive attacks, the displacement? Because as long as their homeland is occupied, Palestinians are treated as second-class citizens under this apartheid system. And now this escalated violence against them, what option do they have but to resist? And in fact, isn't the Zionist entity, by launching this level of aggression, asking for more tensions and violence bilaterally?
The fact is that the Zionist regime continues to fail to learn the lesson of the past 77 years, which is that the Palestinian people will never give up their land, their homes, their identity, and will continue to resist and organize until all of Palestine is free from the river to the sea. There is no future for the Zionist project, despite its horrific violence, despite its backing from the United States and its fellow imperialist powers in Britain, France, Canada, Germany, etc. The fact is that the Zionist regime only has one method of operation, and that method of operation is to attempt to make Palestinian life unlivable. And that the Palestinian people have a clear path and have been progressing forward on this path, and that is the path of resistance. That is the path of resistance until liberation. The fact is that at the same time that the Zionists are causing this horrific tragedy inside the refugee camps in the West Bank, much as in Gaza, the Palestinian refugees are also at the center of the growing resistance movement in the West Bank and throughout occupied Palestine. The West Bank is not quiet and is not standing by as the Zionist regime engages in this assault. The people of the West Bank, the people of Palestine, are going to fight for their homes, for their lands, and for their future against an enemy that wants nothing more than their destruction. And so there is a very clear path forward, and that path forward is one of resistance. But the resistance is facing, you know, very dangerous forces that are trying to do everything to destroy it. And that's why it's so important to have Palestinian, Arab, and international unity behind and in support of the resistance, rather than attempting to seek fake solutions with a Zionist project that has proven itself time and time again to only be interested in the liquidation of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian cause, whereas the Palestinian people themselves have continued to develop their resistance time and time again through struggle after struggle and intifada after intifada to make it clear that Palestine is not for sale and the Palestinian people will not be moved.
And I'd like for you to weigh in on that, Mr. Akumsi. When it comes to resistance, please tell us what other option, when international law does not hear your people, when international organizations and governments that do can barely help, tell me what option Palestinians have other than resistance to fight, to preserve, to hold on to what they have.
Actually, we don't have much of an option other than resistance, because what other options are there? The United Nations is basically a dead organization since the U.S. gutted it basically and made it a tool of imperial power. And so international law is not being obeyed. The International Court of Justice is being manipulated, as is the International Criminal Court. Politics plays a role, as is the power of the might of the gun of the U.S. imperial power, with the help of Britain and France and other countries. And Israel, as a Zionist regime, is basically present in every capital in the Western world, from Canada to the U.S. to Germany to England, and to even Australia, and that's where levers of power in those countries are. That leaves, as Charlotte said, only one thing and one thing only, which has been successful in thwarting the Zionist plans for the past 80 years, and that is the pull of Palestine. Of course, with support from some international supporters and some countries, very few countries, but certainly the people of Palestine and the international global community, with boycott, divestment, sanctions, and the local resistance, similar to what happened in South Africa. We have not given up. We will not give up. And I think, you know, I'm optimistic that this episode will end eventually. This nightmare will end. The best evidence of it, by the way, is Donald Trump's bluster about ethnically cleansing Gaza. Well, Israel has been trying to ethnically cleanse Gaza for 80 years. What makes Trump able to achieve something different now? His predecessors couldn't do it. Biden was also for ethnic cleansing, but he couldn't do it. So certainly the American government has shown that it's limited, and the Israeli government has shown that it's limited and unable to achieve their goals. And again, that's thanks to a stubborn population of 15 million Palestinians in the world and tens and hundreds of millions of supporters around the world who say no to colonization, no to ethnic cleansing, yes to liberation, yes to freedom.
Thank you there, Mazin. And Charlotte, I asked both of you, I put the question of resistance to both of you to bring me ultimately to this question. So we see the occupation time and again, especially for this escalation in the last month or so against refugee camps there in the occupied West Bank, say that we're going in after resistance due to the resistance operations and activities against the occupation. So my question to you, suppose starting tomorrow there is no resistance, would it be a new dawn for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank? Would it be an end to the ethnic cleansing against them? Would it be an end to their marginalization, to their apartheid, to their treatment, to their attempted annexation of everything they have in the occupied West Bank?
Quite the opposite. The resistance is the sword and the shield of the Palestinian people. And this lesson can be viewed very clearly in history. In the era of Al-Nakba in 1948, there was not an organized resistance. There were people who resisted in their areas, many people who refused to give up their land, who, looked for a one gun in the village to be able to defend themselves. But there wasn't an organized resistance in the sense of the modern Palestinian liberation movement. And what we saw was the great horrors of Al-Nakba that the Palestinian people are continuing to resist to the present day. If we look at the history in 1982, when the occupation forces were assaulting Beirut and the Palestinian resistance were forced to leave to Tunis, it was days afterwards that the occupation oversaw the entry of fascist militias into Sabra and Shatila camps in order to kill thousands of Palestinians and destroy Palestinian refugee camps here in Lebanon. In Gaza, it was the resistance continuing to fight in Jabalia and northern Gaza throughout the strip from the south to the north that finally forced the occupation's hands into a ceasefire. It is without the resistance, Palestinians are in even greater danger because the Zionist project is not interested simply in stopping the resistance. It's interested in ending Palestinian life, identity, and existence. It's interested in forcing Palestinians outside of Palestine by all means, whether that they are doing that by making Palestinian life unlivable or simply by dropping thousands of tons of weaponry upon the Palestinian people. It has been consistently the resistance forces that defend the Palestinian people and that keep Palestine and the people alive.
Thank you, Charlotte. And Mazin, according to the latest figures out of the Palestinian Authority, about 17,000 people have now been forced out of the Jenin refugee camp, leaving it almost deserted. In Nur Shams, over 6,000 people, that's about two-thirds of the population there, forced out. Another 10,000 have been pushed out of the Tukaram refugee camp. Tell me, where in today's world does this happen on this scale? What is happening? And where you see so much indifference from world leaders, specifically in the West?
Yes, on both points, you are right. This is not happening anywhere else on Earth today. And not only that, if some areas of the world, some of this is happening on a smaller scale, but it is being paid attention to, and there's UN resolutions and so forth issued against such things. But this case is exceptionalism. It goes back again to the Zionist impunity. Basically, they can get away literally with murder, with genocide, with ethnic cleansing, because they have their lobbies in Washington, D.C., and London, and other capitals. This is what's sick about this and why it has to change. And I think it is changing It will change because it's impacting the whole world. It's not a Palestinian problem per se. It is a problem for the whole world. When we don't have this nightmare of Zionist ethnic cleansing and genocide, that's when we will have peace also in the streets of Los Angeles and San Francisco and Washington, D.C. and London. The whole world is actually in turmoil because of this unjust situation here.
All right, time has gotten the better of us. I wanted to ask a couple more questions, but we have to go. And I want to thank you both for joining us on our Spotlight program. Mr. Elmazi and Qum Sieh, they're joining us out of occupied Bethlehem, and Charlotte Cates joining us from Lebanese capital, Beirut. And this brings us to the end of this segment of your Spotlight program. Thank you for joining in, and bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This title given to the 11th Imam, Al-Askari, is because of a military camp.
Al-Kindi, he was a philosopher who lived during the time of Imam Hassan al-Askari. When he gets there, he finds Imam moving towards a community who are anticipating him.
This is Dialogue, an introduction on the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Hassan ibn Ali al-Askari alayhi salam, the father of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, was the 11th Imam of the infallible Imams from the Ahlul Bayt of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. The blessed and pious Imam carried the banner of Islam, undertook the goals of the religion, and sacrificed his life unto this way. He was indeed a fountainhead of knowledge and wisdom. He faced many incredible difficulties and tragedies and hardships in order to spread and promote and keep intact the high values and goals of the religion of Islam. Truly, there are so many countless favors that have been bestowed upon the Muslims by the divinely appointed Imams, the infallible and immaculate Imams, including Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam. Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Askari alayhi salam. Of course, Imam Askari alayhi salam is the 11th divinely appointed Imam out of the 12 total divinely appointed Imams from the household of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. Now, we find that Imam al-Askari alayhi salam was also contemporary with the Abbasid Caliph by the name of Muhtadi. And so Muhtadi al-Abbasi, of course, was a very ruthless, a very bloodthirsty, a very savage individual. And of course, he had a special enmity with the Shia Muslims or the followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. So we find that there's a conversation between Ahmad bin Muhammad and Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam. So in this conversation, Ahmad ibn Muhammad, he says to Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam that al-Muhtadi Abbasi has begun killing many of the Shia in various different places. And Ahmad bin Muhammad said to Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, "O my master, Ya Sayyidi, Ya Mawlai, praise be to Allah, who has made him, Muhtadi, busy away from you, for I have heard that he even threatened you, and that he said, by Allah," this is Muhtadi Abbasi is saying, "by Allah, I will dispel and disperse them again." And so it's interesting here that Ahmad bin Muhammad, he praises Allah that when the Shias are being killed, at least this ruthless Abbasid caliph does not have his sights set on the Imam. So what a beautiful way for the companions and the followers of the Imams to be more concerned about the Imam alayhi salam than to be concerned about themselves. Really a lesson for us in the present day that we should be thinking about the Imam of our age way more than we are thinking about ourselves or our own personal or private problems. So in response, Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam, he says that this will only make his life shorter. This killing of the Shia is only going to make his life shorter. And then he says, "You count from this day 5 days, and he shall be killed on the 6th day after meeting meanness and disgrace." And so it's really amazing, but this is exactly historically what happened, that on the 6th day, Muhtadi Abbasi was killed, and the Imam had foretold and foreseen this event as happening. And so, of course, you know, this is something that is really not only amazing, but it teaches us that the Imams have access to this hidden knowledge and that they are part and parcel to this hidden knowledge that they have, and that we should really, you know, consider their lives at the end of the day to be much more worth in value than our own. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Askari alayhi salam. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
What I want to do today is I want to look at one particular tradition in which the Imam alayhi salam discusses qualities that he expects in the Shia. Wa anta fi khair, and you are in a good place, wa ila khair, and you are striving towards something good. But don't call yourself our Shia. Yeah? This calling ourselves of a Shia is something that requires consistency in action. Consistency in action the way the Imam of our time wants us to be consistent in that action. You know, and this is something requires heart to back it up. You know, I was doing this class yesterday, and I'll go through these points quickly, but this is an important point that came about it, you know, that one of the main ingredients for success in this world, for us to be able to connect to God consistently, is that the heart has to be awakened, right? The heart has to be in sync with what intellectually we know to be true, right? You follow me or no, right? So intellectually we know a lot, yeah? We know what there is God, we know that God sent messengers, we know that God selected the imma. Intellectually, we know these things. Intellectually as well, we know that there is a day of judgment, will be taken into account. All of these things we know. Then how come there is inconsistency in our actions? Right? The levels of inconsistency are not... nowhere am I saying we're bad people, but it's just not as good as it's supposed to be, or as it can be. Right? I don't do all the mustahabbat that I can. I may end up doing something that maybe I shouldn't, right? Why? It's because the heart is not there behind that action, right? And this is why we spent, I think, 7 lectures talking about the heart previously. The heart is so important.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
In the limelight.
Critics of US President Donald Trump say he's declaring himself above the law. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CNN, cable news network, has covered this story and tells us more. President Donald Trump on Saturday, 15th of February, offered a cryptic one-sentence insight into what appears to be the guiding philosophy behind the first weeks of his presidency and his expansive and unprecedented efforts to reshape the use of executive authority. Trump claimed in a social media post, now pinned atop his profile, he said, "He who saves his country does not violate any law." Donald Trump has dramatically reimagined the scope of his executive power at the start of his second term in office, issuing scores of executive actions. The efforts have been bolstered by the administration's implicit confidence in its capacity to defend itself from legal challenges, as Donald Trump, in part, sought to remake the judiciary during his first term in office. Still, Trump's extraordinary attempts to expand the power of the executive branch have hit legal roadblocks in recent days. Dozens of court cases have swiftly challenged Trump's policies and prompted judges to put on hold some of the implementation to determine whether the moves are legal. The lawsuits include challenges to stopping federal foreign aid, firing federal workers, ending government programs, and even closing whole agencies altogether. Trump's Saturday social media post is likely to have echoes in courts of law, and government attorneys defending his policy decisions against more than 60 lawsuits are arguing to protect and expand executive power. The court cases so far have prompted lawyers from the Justice Department to argue that Donald Trump's power as president shouldn't be limited within the executive branch and shouldn't be tied up in the federal judiciary, especially as he makes decisions around the federal workforce and spending. Several of the cases have set up the Trump administration to attempt to strike down congressional authority, especially over spending and mechanisms that Congress put in place in the past to check the executive's authority. Some of the cases primed the Trump administration for an explicit clash with Congress's appropriation power, and many look at the Constitution's outlines for the office of the president. One fast-moving early notable case is about the president's power over an independent watchdog for federal workers, called the Office of Special Counsel. Donald Trump fired that official weeks ago, only to have a court reinstate him quickly. On Sunday, the Trump administration pushed the case to the U.S. Supreme Court for emergency review. It becomes the first dispute before the justices for this administration to test the boundaries of executive power. The swift pace of firings appear designed to force the Supreme Court's hand, in the same way that Trump appears eager to challenge other long-standing legal norms, such as birthright citizenship and the president's power to pause spending. Acting Solicitor General Sarah Harris on Wednesday told the Senate Democrats the Justice Department intends to urge the Supreme Court to overrule a 1935 precedent that allows Congress to create protections for certain federal officials so they cannot be fired without a just cause. In the Trump administration's view, those protections prevent the president from adequately supervising principal officers in the executive branch of the government who execute the laws on the president's behalf. The national broadcaster ABC News has also covered this same story. A post on Saturday, 15th of February, on X and Truth Social by President Donald Trump has Democrats and critics accusing him of acting like a dictator and declaring himself above the law. "He who saves the country does not violate any law," Trump wrote in the post. Trump did not elaborate, and the White House offered no comment, but it later shared the post on its X account alongside Trump's mugshot from the Fulton County, Georgia election interference case. He also posted the quote on his Truth Social platform and shared a user's post with a quote set against a portrait of Napoleon Bonaparte on horseback. The quote is often attributed to Napoleon Bonaparte, though the origins are disputed. A similar quote, "He who saves a nation violates no law," is said by actor Rod Steiger, playing Napoleon in a 1970 movie Waterloo. In the weeks since assuming office, a number of Donald Trump's actions have raised questions about their legality. The Trump administration faces numerous lawsuits and accusations of violating the U.S. Constitution, including for executive orders on freezing foreign aid and Elon Musk's actions as head of the new Department of Government Efficiency. Donald Trump is the first current or former U.S. president to be convicted of a crime. Last month, a judge, citing protections afforded to the office of the president, sentenced him to an unconditional discharge in his criminal hush money case, sparing him punishment but cementing his felon status. Donald Trump's post on Saturday, 15th of February, sparked backlash from Democrats, who accused him of using the office of the presidency to justify unlawful or ethically dubious actions. "Spoken like a dictator," wrote California Senator Adam Schiff in a post on X. Democratic New York Representative Richie Torres also criticized Donald Trump's post. Richie Torres wrote, "Donald Trump seems to believe he can do." Richie Torres posted, "Donald Trump seems to believe he can do whatever he wishes in the name of saving the country. In our constitutional republic, the means matter more than the ends. The U.S. Constitution trumps the policy preferences of President Trump." In an interview on ABC News' This Week program, former Republican National Committee Chair Rince Priebus, who was Donald Trump's first chief of staff in his first term in office, downplayed the president's words, calling the post catnip for the media. "It's entertainment for Trump. It's a distraction," Priebus said. Rince Priebus excused the post as mere trolling, saying Trump enjoys taking a grenade out on a Saturday afternoon, throwing it on the floor and watching everybody react. "This is what the president does," he said. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story. Critics rounded on Donald Trump on Sunday, 16th of February, for likening himself to Napoleon Bonaparte in a dictatorial social media post, echoing the French emperor's assertion that he who saves his country does not violate any laws. The post came at the end of another tumultuous week early in Trump's second presidency, during which acolytes questioned the legitimacy of judges making a succession of rulings to stall his administration's aggressive seizure or dismantling of federal institutions and budgets. His defiance of some of those orders, including one ordering the restoration of funding to bodies such as the National Institutes of Health, has led to several of the president's opponents declaring a constitutional crisis. "He's the most lawless president in U.S. history," Robert Reich, a former U.S. Secretary of Labor, wrote in The Guardian. Robert Reich added, "This is bonkers. In our system of government, it's up to the courts of law to determine whether the president is using his power legitimately, not the president." Donald Trump laid out his position in the tweet posted on Saturday afternoon after a round of golf at his Florida resort. The quote, as internet sleuths soon discovered, is a version of a phrase attributed to Napoleon Bonaparte. He who saves his country violates no law. Another version appeared in the 1970 movie Waterloo, starring Rod Steiger as a dictator who rode roughshod over the French constitution to declare himself emperor and pursue world domination before his comeuppance at the pivotal 1815 battle, from which the film's title Waterloo is derived. Senior Democrats led the criticism of Donald Trump. The Virginia U.S. Senator Tim Kaine, Hillary Clinton's running mate in the 2016 presidential election, told Fox News Channel that occupation of the White House was not a mandate to ignore the courts of law. The president has authority, but the president also has to follow the law, Tim Kaine said. There's this law that, you know, the Empowerment Act that says once Congress has appropriated dollars for a particular purpose, the president is not allowed to say, yeah, I don't like that, I'm going to spend this money, but not that money. That's why, so far, there's a whole lot of lawsuits that have been successful. They'll go through appeals courts, but a lot of the president's extreme executive actions that hurt folks are being challenged in courts of law right now. According to the Associated Press, the administration is facing at least 70 lawsuits nationwide, covering actions from the attempted elimination of birthright citizenship to the freezing of federal grants and funds, and the accessing of sensitive computer systems and data by unofficial entities. Donald Trump's wrecking ball approach since his 20th of January inauguration continued this week with deeper infiltration by Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency into federal institutions, and the latest firings of vast numbers of government employees. On Sunday, the Bloomberg News Agency reported a wave of new dismissals at health department agencies, including at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC.
Mm-hmm.